talking history. This is News Talk.
We shall fight on the beaches, we shall fight in the hills, we shall never surrender.
And out of that silence came thousands of voices.
The strategy of the white man has always been divide and conquer.
As one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Auch die Rollen, Argus, Akhoisa.
Good evening and welcome. We're talking history on News Talk 106 to 108 with me, Patrick Gagan. In tonight's show, we're looking at the history of Fine Gael as we continue our series on the major political parties in Ireland, and we'll be debating its successes and failures. You can email us your thoughts and views, talkinghistory@newstalk.com, and we'd love to hear from you. Founded in 1933 following a merger of different groupings, Fine Gael traces its history back to Michael Collins and Arthur Griffith, as well as to Cumann na n-Éill, the first party to hold office in the newly independent Irish state. Advocating for law and order, economic development and European integration, Fine Gael has played a pivotal role in shaping modern Ireland, leading numerous governments, but it has also experienced a share of rejection by the electorate and has struggled to match the electoral success of its historic rival and now coalition partner, Fianna Fáil. And so in tonight's show, we want to assess the strengths and weaknesses, successes and failures of Fine Gael. And to help me do this, I'm delighted to welcome our panel of experts. Dr. Maurice Manning is the former Chancellor of the National University of Ireland and is a former Fine Gael TD and Senator, as well as a distinguished academic. And he's the author of A History of the Blue Shirts, as well as a biography of a former leader of Fine Gael, James Dillon. Dr. Elaine Callanan lectures in history at Carlow College and is an expert on how politicians and political parties campaigned in elections in Ireland just before the foundation of the Free State. And she's the author of Electioneering and Propaganda in Ireland, Votes, Violence and Victory, 1917 to 1921. And she's the co-editor of Vying for Victory, the 1923 general election in the Irish Free State. Dr. Mel Farrell is an historian and author and is an expert on 20th century Irish political, social and cultural history. And he's the author of Party Politics in a New Democracy, The Irish Free State, 1922 to 1937. And he's one of the co-editors of Vying for Victory on the 1923 general election. Professor Ciara Meehan is Dean of Students at the University of Galway. And her books include The Cosgrave Party, A History of Cumann na n-Éill, as well as A Just Society for Ireland, 1964 to 1987. And she's the co-author of Saving the State, Fine Gael from Collins to Varadkar. Well, you're all very welcome. And later in the show, I'll be talking to Leo Varadkar, Fine Gael TD for Dublin West, and of course, former leader of Fine Gael and former Taoiseach. Well, as I say, you are all very welcome. And Maurice, I might begin with you and this question of dating the foundation of Fine Gael, because should we be talking about 1933 when the party formally came into existence, or do we go further back to Cumann na n-Éill and therefore we talk about the period where W.T. Cosgrave was in power, or do we go even further back then to Michael Collins and Arthur Griffith?
Well, look, 1923 is the foundation date for the party. And this, in a way, was admitted by Owen O'Duffy, who became leader of the first Fine Gael, when he said it was like pouring old wine into a new bottle, that the party remained, the party that he, that became Fine Gael, was in all, to all intents and purposes, substantially Cumann na n-Éill.
And it's interesting you mention Owen O'Duffy there, because he's someone who doesn't normally or doesn't always appear or isn't always championed by the party because of those later leanings. And it's interesting when you look at that history then, it does go back really to the foundation of the state, and that's a big part of its identity. Time and time again, you would have heard leaders like Enda Kenny talking about the party that founded the state, the party that set up the institutions, that does seem to be a crucial core part of its identity.
It's an essential, fundamental part of its identity. It was the party that founded the state. It was the party that established the institutions against, in a very short period of time. I mean, it's extraordinary how quickly it all happened. It happened, and of course there were imperfections, there were problems, there were things that didn't work. But they were the people, and that was fundamental to that first generation of politicians, Cosgrave, McGilligan, Mulcahy and so on. They regarded that as what they had done for the Irish people, and that they were going to protect it against everything else, and it was utterly part of their identity.
So, Morris, then talk to us then about what happened in 1933 when Fine Gael formally was founded. We see a coming together then of various different groupings.
There were three groupings there. Yeah, there was the first attempt to break the mould, the Civil War mould, with the emergence of James Dillon and Frank McDermott and the National League. And it really had no substance. That Dillon and McDermott were both old Irish Party people, and they were representing the remnants of the loyalty to the old Irish Party. They hoped they could bridge a gap between the Civil War parties. Both of them significantly made good contributions in trying to do that. And what led to the Blue Shirts was what they saw, and some will argue about this, but I think the facts are fairly clear. There was the threat of a breakdown of law and order in 1932-33. The jail gates had been opened, the IRA prisoners had been released, and there was an air of vengeance around the place that they were going to settle scores with the old gang. Many even thought De Valera wanted this to happen. I don't think he did, and I think De Valera comes out of it reasonably well. But this was the fear. They experienced meetings being broken up. They experienced mob violence, and they felt the need for protection. Now, the Blue Shirts are a different story altogether, and it doesn't reflect any great credit on many of the people in Fine Gael. That basically, there were a number of intellectuals, James Hogan of Cork and Michael Tierney and others, who were greatly influenced by Catholics or their version of Catholic social thinking, the corporate state and all of that. They felt that this would be a much better form of democracy in Ireland. It was all theoretical stuff. But the biggest mistake Cumann na n Éill and the Centre Party, not the National League, the Centre Party made, was to get Eoghan O'Duffy to take over as leader of the party. Had he left politics in 1932, he would be a national hero today. He was revered for his work in founding the Guards. He was hugely involved in Gaelic games and athletics. O'Duffy had been infatuated with fascism. He genuinely wanted to establish a fascist state. And he was very quickly collared by the leaders of Cumann na n Éill, who made sure that he had no real power. And they got rid of him within a year. And he went off then on his adventure to Spain, which was a disaster. And he flirted around with fascist politics for the rest of his life. But by 1934, Fine Gael had become old Cumann na n Éill. Dillon was now a deputy leader of the party. McDermott was on his way out. And it was old Cumann na n Éill back in new bottles with a new name.
And Mel, it's interesting that the name Blue Shirts is still applied to Fine Gael. It's a part of the identity that it just can't really escape from, even if it wanted to.
Absolutely. It's like the skeleton in the closet for the party, really. From Cumann na n Éill's perspective, the merger process was very much a defensive merger. Obviously, you had the Centre Party established in September 1932. In response to largely the economic war. And the fact that the Centre Party very quickly established strong roots was a reflection really of Cumann na n Éill's lacklustre performance when it initially went into opposition. Cumann na n Éill didn't really adapt to opposition and the role of opposition politics. And in the Dáil, Cumann na n Éill speakers adopted a sort of "we told you so" tone. With regard to the Fianna Fáil government. So obviously then, Morris has touched on the Blue Shirts element. They tried to merge the Centre Party and Cumann na n Éill in late 1932, but De Valera called the snap election in January of 1933, and that sort of caught the two parties off guard, and they had to fight that election as separate parties. So by the autumn of 1933, the two parties realised, you know, that the Blue Shirt movement would give impetus in terms of organisation to a new merged party. And of course, from the Blue Shirt's perspective, the ban on the commemoration of Collins, Griffith and O'Higgins, which they complied with, was beginning to force them outside the law. So they saw the opportunity here to become part of the constitutional opposition. As Morris said, it was a real mistake to involve O'Duffy to the extent that they did. But I think on the Cumann na Gael side, there was a feeling really that, you know, Cosgrave had lost now two elections in 1932 and 1933, and that it was time for somebody more charismatic maybe to come to the helm. And of course, just to respond as well to the point about Cumann na Gael being the nucleus of Fine Gael, it provided the bulk of the TDs, obviously. O'Duffy was actually never elected as a Fine Gael TD. He was president of the party outside the Dáil. Cosgrave continued to lead the party inside the Dáil. But the mistake with the blue shirts has definitely stuck in terms of Fine Gael, even though O'Duffy was a member of the party for 12 months. He resigned on the 18th of September 1934, and the Blue Shirt organisation itself subsequently split in 1934. And by November 1936, the party quietly wound down the Blue Shirts. So it's always been, you know, that skeleton in the closet for Fine Gael.
And if we look at that period, Elaine, 1923 to 1932, because that was its most sustained period in government until 2011. And when we look at all of that, a new state created, the civil war, the bitterness that resulted from that, what were its achievements in office in that period?
Yeah, to be fair to Cumann na Gael and later Fine Gael, I think they had quite a substantial number of achievements and a few errors along the way, but it was a new nation and they were nation building. And the economic situation in the country was actually dire at this point in time. So that was something they were going to have to address as well. So they began by centralising government control, particularly over the local authorities, which were in rather disarray since the 1920 local elections. And that was largely due to the transition from being under British rule to Irish rule. There was talk of local government being corrupt and spendthrift and all that kind of thing. So they centralised that. Now, you can argue pro and con in regards to that, but I actually think it was a good judgment at the start of the foundation of the state. They also consolidated the army a little bit in that period of time. Now, whether that was out of fear of, you know, threatened IRA situations, it's hard to know. But certainly, if you're trying to reduce expenditure, it was a good idea. They did create the Civic Guards, which subsequently went on to become an Gard the Síochána Cónaithe. And that was another way, really, of controlling the state in many ways, because these were going to be an unarmed police force during that time. They also tried to consolidate land. Now, land, as we know, has always been an issue in Ireland, and they introduced the Land Act of 1923. You know, that was a particularly good decision. But they did also invest in road and railway and infrastructure. Now, some of that was as a result of destruction during the Civil War. It had to be done. But the other thing we begin to see, you can see the Catholic influence coming into government decisions. And, you know, you particularly see decisions being made in relation to education. Now, some are good. The education boards were amalgamated and consolidated. The intermediate and leaving certificate was introduced. But school control or school building control went over to church control. Now, not just the Catholic Church, but the Catholic Church largely. Having said that, and to be fair to the churches in this time, if they hadn't stepped into education and healthcare, it might have been a long time before the country got on its feet in that regard. And I'll just mention one other thing to give Cumann na Gael some credit during the 1920s, and that is they were trying to create a more modern society, and they were aware of the fact that radio was an up-and-coming thing. So they were involved in the creation of the new radio station, 2RN. They saw kind of the Irish revival to be placed in education and radio broadcasting. So I'd say it was a mixed bag, but largely they did focus a lot on the creation of industry. And it was good. It didn't create a huge amount of jobs. It didn't fulfil the country's needs. There was still a lot of poverty in Ireland and a lot of subsistence living in Ireland. But it was a step in the right direction.
And Ciara, once you have the foundation of Fianna Fáil then in 1926 and Fianna Fáil TDs then taking their seats a year later, you really do seem to have the party on the back foot from that point on and struggling to really come to terms with this new threat to their time in office and really seem to fail the test then by the time it comes to 1932.
I think what happens after the formation of Fianna Fáil is actually a really interesting period in Cumann na Gael's history. And I wouldn't quite say that they were on the back foot. So certainly they were still referencing the treaty, holding on to policies that had been there since the formation of Cumann na Gael, rather than moving with the times. So they seemed outdated in that respect by the time the 1932 election came about. But at the same time, if you look at their electioneering techniques that they use in the September 1927 election and again in the 1932 election and even 1933, Cumann na Gael become really innovative at that time. They retained the services of O'Kennedy Brindley, an advertising agency, and they produced through that agency some really exciting election posters. And what you really see kind of is the emergence of a new type of electioneering. Cosgrave recorded a film at one point that was used in the early 1930s and that was driven around the state to allow him reach areas that he couldn't physically get to himself. And an aeroplane was actually used as well for one of the by-elections in that period. So it's a really interesting contrast. You kind of get this quite downtrodden party in one respect that is tired and seems to be out of ideas. But then on the other side of it, you see that they are trying to fight for their existence by engaging things like advertising agencies and so on. Ultimately, though, what happens with the 1932 election is that Fianna Fáil are the party that are looking to the future and that are offering the types of policies that we'll see are seen to, you know, develop the state and give people opportunities to have more money in their pocket. And Cumann na Gael are still referencing the treaty 10 years on. It's a done deal, obviously, by that stage. It's politically irrelevant by 1932. And they're effectively outmaneuvered by a party that is looking to the future while they're focusing on the past.
And Morris, what goes wrong for the party then between 1932 and 2011? Because you do have periods in office, you do have significant achievements, but you also have significant periods out of office. And they are never returned after a period in government. They never stay in power until 2016. That why is it that you have these long periods when they're in opposition, then you have a single-term Fine Gael government, and then they're back in opposition again?
The big reason is that Fianna Fáil in power was a very effective government. And Fianna Fáil was the popular party in the 1930s, and there was nothing Cumann na Gael could really do to dislodge them from that as part of the cycle of politics. But then the war came, the Second World War. There was a semblance of national unity. There was very little that Fine Gael could do during that period when there was a question of keeping Ireland out of the war. And after the war, by the end of the war, Fine Gael was run down. They had difficulty in finding a leader. Cosgrave stepped back. He knew he had done all he could do. Mulcahy was quite a heroic figure in this regard. He toured the country on his motorbike, trying to galvanise support, getting local branches formed again and doing all of that. By 1948, he had lost in election after election. But 1948 gave them a chance to get back into government. And they did, forming what, again, Lamass called a makeshift majority, began to have some sort of self-belief. And the 1948-51 government was a very energetic government. It did things. It was quite successful, and it was almost re-elected. It came very close to being re-elected. It fell because it lost the support of a number of independents. But it re-established Fine Gael as a party of government.
And Morris, it is a significant difference between Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil that every Fianna Fáil leader has been Taoiseach. But then with Fine Gael, you have, as you mentioned there, Richard Mulcahy, James Dillon, in later years, Alan Jukes and Michael Noonan, that you do have periods where Fine Gael leaders are in opposition for their entire time.
That's true. And each of those leaders, in turn, I mean, Mulcahy never really wanted to be leader. He was very quick to stand down. He might have been Taoiseach, but it's John A. Costello, who was never leader of the party, but became Taoiseach there. But now, in the current state, for the last 10 years, the leader of Fine Gael is automatically a potential Taoiseach. And that has bridged that enormous gap.
And Elaine, it's interesting when you do look at that first inter-party government in 1948, you do see significant achievements there. It's working with Clan na Publicta, it's working with Labour and some other groupings. And it does, despite bringing together all these different forces into this coalition, it is able to make some real progress on things, including, you see, the Declaration of the Republic.
Yeah, it does actually. It was an unlikely amalgamation of different groupings. I mean, if you look at Fine Gael at this time, it was kind of seen as the Conservative Party, the party of the wealthier, the kind of more prosperous farmer, with kind of a leaning towards the Commonwealth, whereas, say, Clan na Publicta under Sean McBride was kind of much more Republican in its attitude. So it was an unlikely mix, but they actually successfully did run a government during that period of time. And one of their probably greatest achievements was their kind of fiscal policy, which was much more outward looking. Ireland was not a country of export. In fact, actually, its only export market was Britain. So one of their creations was the Industrial Development Authority. Basically, if you look at the progress of industry in Ireland throughout the years and we move on into later years, you can see that the IDA was quite constructive in bringing foreign investment into Ireland and developing the export market. And of course, probably one of the bigger shocks was the Declaration of the Republic during that time, which of course happened in Ottawa in Canada by Costello at the time. It did kind of create difficulties with the Northern Ireland situation, which were worked on in quite well, actually, in later years by the likes of Garrett Fitzgerald. But it did create the Republic of Ireland and created what we're living in now today in many ways. So there was pros and cons to that inter-party government. But for such a collection, you know, of five different parties to come together, I think they made some good decisions during that time.
Well, tonight we are continuing our series on the history of the political parties in this country. Tonight we are looking at the history of Fine Gael, and we're going to take a quick break now. And when we come back, I'll be talking to Leo Varadkar, former leader of Fine Gael, and of course, former Taoiseach. That's right after this. Welcome back. We're talking history, and tonight we're looking at the history of Fine Gael. And I'm delighted to be joined by Leo Varadkar, Fine Gael TD for Dublin West, and of course, former leader of Fine Gael and former Taoiseach. Leo, you're very welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Now, Leo, we know each other many years. I worked for you as one of your advisors in your first term as Taoiseach. And I noticed that you always had that huge interest in history and in the history of Fine Gael. You wanted to make sure that important events like the Declaration of the Republic was recognised and so on. Was the history of the party important to you?
Well, look, I suppose at a personal level, I've always been interested in history and, you know, did Leaving Cert history and like to read history books, largely because I'm fascinated by the stories of the past, but also because very few things haven't happened before. They've just happened before in a different way. So I find that history is as much a study of the future as it is a study of the past. So it's something I was just generally interested in anyway. But definitely as party leader for 7 years, I felt it was important that our members and our activists should understand our heritage and where we came from. So we did a couple of things. You know, we commissioned a very small, short, easy to read history of the party, which went down really well for people who maybe are too busy to read long history books. And then also tried to make sure that we upgraded and recognised the various different commemorations that the party was involved in. So people know, of course, the Bail na Blá Collins commemoration, which isn't a Fine Gael party one, but one that we're very involved in. But we tried to bring in some new ones and some important ones as well. And definitely for me, both the foundation of the party, the Fine Gael party, and then also the Declaration of the Republic in 48 and the coming into effect of the Republic in 49, it was important that we should mark them because it is one of the things that we achieved.
When you joined Fine Gael as a young man, was the history a factor in that or was it the party as it was then?
Look, it was a number of factors. You know, politics is about what you're going to do in the future. So what was of most important to me were the party's values and the party's outlook on policy questions looking into the future. But of course, it was important that we were the party that founded the state, defended it alone when others sought to bring it down and defeat it. You know, the party that declared the Republic in 48, a republic in Ireland has been declared many times. Only once was it ever internationally recognised, and that was at that period under the Costello government. And then important things the party did throughout its history. You know, for example, being among the first parties to take an approach to Northern Ireland that recognised that there is a British identity community on the island that needs to be respected, a commitment to European integration going back to Gareth Fitzgerald and John Bruton in particular, and then also certainly from the late 70s onwards, a party that wanted to make the country more socially liberal and more part of the European mainstream. So those kind of things were very important to me. And I joined around the time of John Bruton's time in government. And, you know, that was the rainbow government at the time, three-party government, and one that I think worked very well for the country and sadly didn't get re-elected when perhaps it might have done.
And why do you think that government wasn't re-elected in 97? Why do you think over the course of the history there have been so many times when Fine Gael has been forced out of office? We did a show on Fianna Fáil a few months ago. Fianna Fáil has definitely been much more electorally successful than Fine Gael, certainly up until 2011.
Well, I remember back in 97 that the kind of talk within Fine Gael at the time was that John Bruton called the election at the wrong time. And it's amazing how that particular issue comes up in politics. You know, I always aimed for a summer election, and because I wanted to wait for the Brexit deal to be done, ended up in a winter one. John was actually criticised for having a summer election and was told he should have had it in November. So I think sometimes, you know, people maybe put too much into the month in which the election is held. I do think one thing that is significantly different for Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil is that because Cosgrave and that initial generation of people had to run the country in the 20s, had to build a state and make sure that state didn't fail, they didn't have a huge amount of time to set up a political party, to build up a grassroots organisation. Fianna Fáil did that throughout the 20s before they got into office in the early 30s. And then after that, there was a period of huge political patronage, quite frankly, which helped, you know, jobs in semi-states and so on, which helped to strengthen Fianna Fáil. And I think that's part of it. But that's also a bit of an excuse too, because we had plenty of time in opposition to build up a grassroots movement, which really didn't happen, I think, until the 80s and that sort of Gareth Fitzgerald period when the party reached heights of popularity it's never since achieved, you know, that 39% result in that election in the early 80s.
When you go back to the founding of the party in 1933, it is a little bit confusing because it's made up of these different strands, the old Redmondite tradition, Cumann na Gael, and in a way the party also traces its history back to Michael Collins and Arthur Griffith and the pro-treaty Sinn Féin party. So there are all these different elements that it becomes a little bit confusing to kind of work out when does Fine Gael begin and who should we see as the founders of it?
Yeah, well, look, history, as you know, is more complicated than a lot of people understand. You know, it's often pointed out that Michael Collins died before Fine Gael was formed, and that is true, you know, a good 10 years before it was formed. What people often forget is that Ona Duffy was never a Fine Gael TD. He was a Sinn Féin TD. He was chief of staff of the IRA. So, you know, so there's a lot of things in history are a little bit more complicated than people often understand. But when Fine Gael was founded, there were a number of strains. So, you know, you had Cumann na Gael, which was very much the old Sinn Féin tradition. You know, people like Desmond Fitzgerald, people who'd been in the GPO, the Cosgraves. It also took over really the remnants of the Irish Parliamentary Party, you know, the centre party, which came into Fine Gael. And that would have been the Dillon, Redmond, Parnellite tradition. And so I think they're both Parnellites and Redmondites in Fine Gael. And John Bruton was very much a Redmondite. I see myself as a Parnellite, but I think we're part of that tradition that came through the Irish Parliamentary Party. And then also Southern Unionism threw its lot behind Fine Gael too. And that's often missed out, you know, like the Dockerills, for example, that family. So there are a number of strains within Fine Gael. And I think that's a good thing that we brought those strains together. And as we look towards the potential of unification in the decades to come, perhaps we're the party that's most able to bring new people in.
And going back to the 1930s, for a time it used the United Ireland Party tag as a subtitle, and that sometimes has been revived, but that's maybe again a different perception than people would have that wouldn't really see the unification of the island as a core identity of Fine Gael.
Yeah, and of course, the United Ireland Party is about more than unification. It's about the bringing people together, as well as bringing together the national territory. And it was used a lot at the start. If you look back at the old documents and pamphlets, you'll see UIP being used in the newspapers. You'll see the United Ireland Party being used as a phrase. and it kind of fell out of use. I'm not sure exactly when, and there had been one or two attempts, I think, to revive it. It was something that I thought about doing as leader. But again, part of the reason why we didn't is we kind of took the view that people would see that as our slogan rather than something that might be more relevant to them at that particular moment in time. But still in our constitutional rules, it still is the official name of the party, Fine Gael, the United Ireland Party.
So what do you see as the greatest achievements of Fine Gael in office over its history?
I think there have been a number of things. Obviously, in the early years, there was the foundation of the state. I think in Europe, there are only six countries that are continuous democracies now for a century. And we were instrumental in setting up that democracy and making sure that it remained a democracy, that there was a peaceful transition of power to Fianna Fáil in the 30s. A big shift in economic policy happened under Fine Gael too. A lot of people wouldn't know, for example, that the IDA, the Industrial Development Authority, was established under Fine Gael. There was the big Ireland and Crusher program and the ESB, you know, those big semi-states. So very much industrial policy in building up our own infrastructure, but also opening us up to trade in the world, which, of course, Sean Lamass is a big part of too. But people often forget the important Fine Gael role in that. I think there were three other important areas, you know, a real commitment to European integration and European Union, which we've always supported as a party. An approach to Northern Ireland, again, as I mentioned earlier, that recognised that there is a large British identity and minority on the island that needed to be respected. And you see that with Sunningdale, you see that with the Anglo-Irish Agreement in particular, some of the things that have happened in more recent years. And then also a party that has tried to make Ireland a more modern place. You know, the first divorce referendum happened under Fine Gael Labour government. The second one did too. So did the marriage equality referendum. And then when Labour weren't in government with us anymore, the referendum to repeal the Eighth was done by Fine Gael and Independents. At the time, for example, half or even most Fianna Fáil TDs didn't support that. Their leader did, but most of them didn't. So, you know, with or without Labour in government, we've shown that we're the party that is willing to bring the country to a more modern, more progressive, more inclusive place, but crucially, a party that can bring the centre with us, which perhaps more radical or more smaller or more left-wing parties can't. And now we haven't always succeeded. We don't win all the referendums, but we do win most of them. And I think we've brought the country into the European modern mainstream in a way that mightn't have happened without us.
And where do you think Fine Gael has got things wrong over its time in office? And what has been its great failures?
Oh, well, look, we got lots of things wrong, and all governments do, and all political parties do. And it is fascinating to read back over, you know, policies from the 60s, 70s and 80s and how different they are to now. You know, we often talk about the Just Society document, and you read some of the suggestions in that, you know, around price controls, for example, and, you know, stuff that we would never seriously consider now, you know, wage controls and so on. So, look, we certainly haven't always got it right in politics, and we won't always get it right. I think one of the regrets, though, is that we failed to get re-elected. You know, the first time Fine Gael actually, the first time Fine Gael actually got re-elected into office was Enda Kenny in 2016, when we formed a second government then. We're now in our third government. I hope we can form a fourth. But that's the first time that's happened in Fine Gael's history. We were only ever in for a few years, if you like, to sort out the mess and then hand the country back to somebody else. And I think we've now broken that cycle.
It's probably unfair to ask you about the leaders over the history that you've admired because, you know, you spoke at John Bruton's funeral, you've worked closely with Enda Kenny, you would have spoken to when Liam Cosgrave died. I think you were Taoiseach then. But over the course of the history, are there some leaders that you've maybe drawn more inspiration from than others?
It's totally unfair, Patrick, because four of them are still alive and I still see them regularly enough, so there's no way I'm going to answer that definitively. I think Enda Kenny has to deserve enormous credit. You know, he took over a party that people had pretty much written off, that, you know, people said was going to die out, you know, or become a minor force in politics. And he turned the party around, gave us that great election victory in 2011, and then turned the country around, restored our economic prosperity and our reputation around the world. So that's an unbeatable legacy, I think, in many ways in terms of recent times. And then, you know, looking back before that, I think, you know, Gareth Fitzgerald was somebody who was very forward thinking, you know, was against the Eighth Amendment, for example, at a time when the country, the people were dramatically in favour of it, tried to bring about divorce, allow divorce in Ireland, and was voted down by people, made a huge effort in relation to Northern Ireland around the Anglo-Irish Agreement. And there aren't many times when you can genuinely say the politicians were ahead of the people. And I think he was in a lot of ways. And so much of what he tried to do during his term as Taoiseach, we've been able to do subsequently.
Was history important for you when you were Taoiseach? Did you find yourself looking back to examples from the past when you were involved in things like Brexit or different types of negotiations or things with Europe?
Yes, you know, definitely was interested always to know if something like this had happened before in our history. You know, I remember during the pandemic, for example, looking back over how the Spanish flu pandemic in the early part of the century was handled, and also other outbreaks. But also, as well as comparative history, there's also what happens in other countries too. Because there's a tendency in Ireland, you know, being a small country, being an island, we often believe that all our problems are homegrown and that all our solutions are to be found through domestic policy alone. That's totally wrong. Almost all the problems and challenges that we face in Ireland have an international dimension. They're happening in other countries too. You can learn a lot by studying what's been done in other countries, what policies they've tried already, which ones worked, which ones didn't. And I definitely always had that as a focus of decision making.
How do you think history will judge your time as Taoiseach?
I don't know. I imagine somebody will write the definitive history in 20 years' time when the dust has settled, and hopefully it'll be kind. What somebody said to me was, when you're head of a government, there's basically three things you have to do. First of all, you have to keep the show on the road, the economy going, public services operating. The third is to deal with whatever comes at you, you know, whether it's a pandemic, whether it's Brexit, whether it's a war in Ukraine. And then you also, having done all that, have to carve out space to do things that are new and are part of your programme and mightn't have otherwise happened. And for me, that was things like workers' rights, like sick pay, like parental leave, the living wage, doubling funding for the arts and sports, putting in place a universal pension system, which just got through the Dáil, making sure that everybody who goes to work now has an additional pension on top of their state pension. So, you know, that's the kind of triangular structure in which I try to do things. And, you know, I hope when people judge my period as Taoiseach, they'll say that the economy and society moved forward, that I dealt with the shocks and surprises well, and was able to carve out some space to do some of those things that were new and may not have been done had a different person been in the chair.
Well, my thanks to Leo Varadkar, TD, former leader of Fine Gael, and of course, former Taoiseach, for joining us tonight for our discussion on the history of Fine Gael. We'll take a quick break now. When we come back, we'll be rejoined by our panel as we explore some of the major themes in the history of the party. So stay with us here on News Talk. Well, welcome back. We're talking history, and we are talking about the history of Fine Gael. I'm rejoined by my panel of experts, Dr. Maurice Manning, the former Chancellor of the National University of Ireland and a former Fine Gael TD and Senator, as well as a distinguished academic, Dr. Elaine Callanan, who lectures in history at Carlow College and who is the author of Electioneering and Propaganda in Ireland, Votes, Violence and Victory, and co-editor of Vying for Victory, the 1923 general election in the Irish Free State. Dr. Mel Farrell is an historian and author and an expert on 20th century Irish political, social and cultural history, the author of Party Politics in a New Democracy, the Irish Free State 1922 to 1937, and the co-editor of that Vying for Victory edition, and Professor Ciara Meehan, Dean of Students at the University of Galway, and the author of The Cosgrave Party, A Just Society for Ireland, and the co-author of Saving the State, Fine Gael from Collins to Varadkar. And before the break there, we heard from Leo Varadkar, former leader of Fine Gael, and of course, former Taoiseach. Maurice, you were a Fine Gael TD and Senator in the 1980s. And that great Gareth Fitzgerald era, both in government between 1982 and 1987 and then in opposition. And what was it like as a TD and a senator in that period?
First of all, there was the advent of Gareth And it's not often that a new leader generates great energy and enthusiasm and an appeal, a sense that almost everything is possible. And he had great capacity to appeal to young people and to women especially. He didn't have the full support of all his party at any stage, and clearly he was too radical for many of the older, not necessarily old in age, but of the more traditional TDs. But he brought energy and excitement. And in particular, the Constitutional Crusade was looking at some of the things that were hitherto untouchable, looking at the Constitution, the role of the Catholic Church, the question of divorce, abortion, all of these things, all of these became issues where he was giving leadership. And that hadn't really happened before. It was an exciting time. I would say that there was a lot of frustration on the part of many of us backbench TDs at the time. We felt that he didn't have the freedom economically he might have had, but for the Labour Party. But he was very loyal to the Labour Party. He built up a very good working relationship with them. The economy, the economic circumstances of the 1980s were appalling, and he was judged on that in the 1987 election.
And Morris, what about then the time when John Bruton was Taoiseach between 1994 and 1997? I think that increasingly is being recognised as a very significant time, as a very significant government. John Bruton's leadership has been hugely praised, the Rainbow Coalition, and it also had some quite considerable achievements, including the introduction of divorce, which Garrett had been unsuccessful in his referendum.
Absolutely. John hadn't been a great leader of the opposition, but no leader of the opposition ever is. It's the toughest job in politics. And he had made a number of mistakes. He was prone to gaffes at times, but he was born to be Taoiseach. He was sure-footed from the moment he became Taoiseach. He learned to work with other people. He had been very much opposed to Sinn Féin, the Workers' Party, but he worked closely and loyally with Democratic Left, and they became both friends and colleagues in arms in that government. He wasn't a supporter of divorce, but he personally, I think, was the deciding factor in a very tight referendum. The fact that he came out at the end and in a very impressive television performance asked the people to support it. And I think that was a key factor. And as you say, when he sadly died recently, there was a re-evaluation, and John emerged as a very substantial and significant Taoiseach. And certainly, if you read the memoirs of John Major and others, you see how well-regarded he was in the whole Anglo-Irish peace process.
And Ciara, Enda Kenny again then is someone who is also a very interesting leader, because he was definitely underestimated by the public. He was underestimated by his own political party, because someone Fine Gael tried quite publicly to remove him just a year before he became Taoiseach. And in a way, it almost strengthened his leadership and the way he was viewed by the public. But he proved quite a lot of people wrong with his time as Taoiseach.
And the energy that he brought to not only the leadership, but I suppose as Taoiseach as well, is I think one of his real hallmarks as well. But you're absolutely right that he was very much underestimated. And he really hit the ground running in terms of the network of meetings that he held across the country to reinvigorate the party, which was so important. And I think, again, Mel has written about this previously too, that, you know, Fine Gael's kind of lackluster approach to branch building and nurturing the structures of the party is something that, you know, had worked against them for a long time. Enda Kenny understood that and really invested a lot of energy into bringing the branches behind his leadership as well, which I think was really important for him. But his time as Taoiseach as well, a man of great energy, his day starting very early in the morning and working right throughout late into the evening. You know, he was somebody who worked a room, who understood the importance of networking and of being very approachable and visible. And I think, you know, in many ways, he kind of mirrored the energy and the personable nature as well that Bertie Ahern had, which of course was such a big trump card for Fianna Fáil at the time too. So certainly underestimated, but more than definitely proved himself as someone who could bring the party and bring successes to it as well.
And Mel, what about the failures then of Fine Gael over the decades, and perhaps that perception that it isn't really it isn't really for the people. It's a bit too middle class or for the well off. It doesn't really get it when it comes to housing or healthcare. You know, all of the criticisms that, you know, Sinn Féin would make now, that Fianna Fáil would have made in the past, that a belief that Fine Gael really is maybe a little bit cut off from the ordinary person, and probably criticisms that have hurt it electorally over the decades, the fact that it isn't really seen as working for the ordinary person.
I think actually a lot of this goes back to the origins of the party. The fact that the party, Cumann na Gael, was formed in government in 1922 at the height of the Civil War. The fact that the party was very much, if you like, the party of the state, whereas Fianna Fáil were formed in opposition in 1926, focused heavily on the grassroots, focused heavily on being a popular party, party of the people, if you like to put it in those terms. And I've always seen, obviously it's not a one-size-fits-all, but I've always seen Fianna Fáil as kind of the more populist, Fine Gael a bit more technocratic, you know, coming into government, becoming very much of the government or of the state in a way that Fianna Fáil in government, I think, was able to kind of retain its identity as a political party, you know, quite cleverly, able to maintain the sort of dynamic party organisation in the constituencies. As Ciara said, that's something that Fine Gael, maybe aside from the 1980s and maybe the end of Kenny era, that's something that Fine Gael really struggled with. But then, of course, there's also, I suppose, the support base as well, in terms of the perception really that maybe Fine Gael was supported more by, if you like, the comfortable classes or the middle classes, in a way that sort of gave it a sort of a reputation for being slightly removed from, you know, the common man and woman.
And Elaine, it is interesting when we look at that early conservatism that we've talked about. I suppose people back in the 1920s and the 1930s wouldn't have believed that Fine Gael in future governments would have been the party that would have passed a referendum allowing divorce, that would have passed a referendum repealing the Eighth Amendment, that would have passed a referendum in favour of marriage equality, that you do see a change and an evolution in the way the party has viewed various social and moral and, I suppose you could even say, cultural issues.
Yes, you do. And I think anybody back in the 1920s to 1940s wouldn't believe any of the political parties would have condoned things like divorce or abortion referendums or things like that. I think when you look at Fine Gael over its collective period, we'll say 1920s to the modern era, where they were weakest, in my opinion, in terms of whether it's from social to economic or all the rest, which was in their leadership. I mean, De Valera was a strong leader. Like him or loathe him, he was a strong leader. He was a personality. People kind of clung to him. It really, in my opinion, took until the Garrett Fitzgerald era for Fine Gael leadership to come to that and even move more into modern times with the likes of Enda Kenny and Leo Varadkar and even Simon Harris today. Really, unfortunately for Fine Gael, they came in at very hard times, and it wasn't necessarily always Fianna Fáil's overspending. Sometimes it was global situations like the 1970s, Yom Kippur War. It all looked good when they came into government at first, but then the oil crisis broke out, inflation shot through the roof, and then they had to become the fix-it party again, if you like. And, you know, I don't think we should underestimate the work that they have done in relation to Northern Ireland and the road to the peace process, if you like. I mean, certainly, you know, Garrett Fitzgerald was involved in the Sunningdale Agreement, and later on he was the negotiator with Margaret Thatcher, which I'm sure was no easy thing to do with the Iron Lady herself.
For the Anglo-Irish Agreement.
Yeah, and you know, they came in then in 1985 with that Anglo-Irish Agreement, which paved the way. All those agreements, with their flaws and, you know, with lack of unionist involvement, which was seen to be a flaw, was, you know, culminated in the 1998 Good Friday Agreement, because all those flaws were rectified. The whole idea of the principle of consent then really took hold at that stage. So I think they've strengthened in leadership. I think they've learned over the years. And in many ways, Fianna Fáil's idea of not going into government with anybody else maybe stood to them a little bit. And Fine Gael's, even though they were good negotiators and good compromisers and all the rest of it, it might have weakened them as a party because they were constantly in government with someone else until more recent times. And even now, we're back into kind of rainbow coalitions, and that's probably going to be the way forward for everybody in the future. But Fianna Fáil did manage to secure permanent places in government over the years by themselves. Fine Gael always struggled with that.
Maurice, what is the Fine Gael identity? Because it definitely seems to have been a party always very strongly pro-Europe, pro-law and order. The economy is an important part of that, a big belief in personal freedoms. Is there a distinctive brand that you can say is the Fine Gael identity or the Fine Gael brand?
There is, but it's almost impossible to define. And on a number of occasions, back in the 1940s, all of the pundits predicted that when the Civil War generation died out, Fine Gael would die out with it. In the 2002 election, Fine Gael was irrelevant. It was my last election. Fine Gael didn't matter. And that was a terrible way to be. And one of the great achievements of Enda Kenny, his job was to make the party relevant again, relevant to people, relevant that people would see it as an essential part of government. And that's what the party has achieved under his leadership.
And Elaine, with Simon Harris, you almost see a return to some of those values that were there right in the 1920s. So he's going on and away back to the very start of the party.
Well, what kind of interested me was the fact that, I mean, there has been like a lot of law and order issues around Dublin. And it seems to me that he's gone back to that very initial concept of Cumann na Gael when they were setting off in 1923 of safety first, law and order, the party of law and order.
OK, well, my thanks to my wonderful panel of experts for joining me tonight to talk about the history of Fine Gael. Dr. Maurice Manning, the former Chancellor of the National University of Ireland, a distinguished former politician and, of course, distinguished academic. Dr. Elaine Callanan of Carlow College, Dr. Merrill Farrell, historian and author, Professor Ciara Meehan, Dean of Students at the University of Galway. And of course, we also heard from Leo Varadkar, Fine Gael TD for Dublin West and former leader of Fine Gael and former Taoiseach. Well, that does bring us to the end of another edition of Talking History. My thanks to my producer, Marisa Sullivan and Peter Malloy on sound. We've got more debate and discussion next week, so hope you can join us then. We've been Talking History. Good night.